This is Terry Crosby.
Andy Steiger.
Steve Kim.
Welcome to the AC Podcast. On this podcast, we want to help you understand and speak the language of our culture and address questions being asked with intellectual honesty, gentleness, and respect. Good day, sirs.
It's good to be with you.
Hello.
All right. We're all here.
And absolutely loving the weather. I don't know where you are and your part of the world listening in, but...
We were the highest temperature in Canada yesterday.
Were we really?
That's what... I read on somebody's Facebook.
What did you guys have yesterday?
26 was my car.
Wow.
Already? Celsius to all you Fahrenheit people.
That's right.
And
like 70 something, isn't it?
Yeah, like
75 or 74.
73.
Just off the top.
Yeah.
No, I saw that too.
It's warm and glorious. Mm-hmm. And it's even staying warm at night. That's the interesting part. And these days, I like to say that British Columbia is the Switzerland of Canada.
It's gorgeous out there this time of the year.
Like this time of year is just
you look up into the gorgeous mountains and with the sunshine right now, it's just like, you want to be up there.
We were there. I was out there with my kids at Manning Park snowshoeing and absolutely
just on the weekend?
It. Yeah.
Oh, they still got lots of snow? Like
tons of snow. Tons of snow.
Nice.
But a lot of our local trails are finally starting to clear up and we're getting out there. Terry and I are outdoor enthusiasts.
Yes.
And
I ran. Like, I was off on holidays all last week. Yep. And I think I ran, at least 4 of the 5 days out of the time I was off.
Nice.
There was still snow up on a little hill that we have here. But then as the week went on, it just, dissipated. Nothing.
Just gorgeous.
Lots of mud.
Yeah. Mud, not so gorgeous.
Yeah.
So as we jump into things today... I kind of directed the podcast today with a film that we're going to be looking at. Now, one of the things that we do at the church I work at now, if you're just tuning in with us, I run Apologetics Canada, but I also oversee the young adult ministry at Northview Community Church. And one of the things that we like to do is something called film and theology. And I think this is a really important habit to get into. And that is when you're watching, any sort of media, but particularly movies, TV shows, that you're constantly engaging with the message that's being communicated. So this is something that we like to help our young people think through. How do you do that? Because I find a lot of people consume movies in particular, just completely brain dead, forgetting that there's a message that's being communicated. And so... we have found this really effective. And by the way, for those of you that are parents, have children, this is a great habit to get into with your kids. When you watch a movie, at the end of the movie, just take a moment to debrief it with them. Help them to get in the habit of actually engaging their mind and thinking through it. But there's a movie that was coming out that I've been looking forward to discussing for some time. I love rock climbing. It's something that I've done since I was in college, actually, when I first started. There was the college that I was at, the community college I was at in Oregon, they had a class on rock climbing. I took that, and I was hooked, loved it, and climbed ever since. And there's this movie that was coming out called Free Solo that I found very interesting because in the rock climbing world, for those of you that are unfamiliar with it, there's a number of different ways that you can climb a mountain, and that might seem new to you. And one of those is just something called bouldering, and that's where you'll just climb rocks that are maybe 15 feet tall or less, and they tend to be more difficult, but you don't go very high. But then you can take a rope, and you can go much higher, and so you can do things where you top rope, where you'll climb to the top, you'll hike up to the top of a mountain, clip a rope in, throw the rope down, and then you climb on belay. But another way that you can do this is where you start down at the bottom and you're in the rope and you start climbing up and you have these things called quick draws or carabiners and you're clipping them into the rock. This is called sport climbing as you're going up the rock. Now, another way that you can climb is if there aren't bolts in the rock to clip into is you can do something called trad climbing, where you're placing gear along the way. So I've partaken in all those different types of rock climbing. And one of the things that gets scary where you begin to lead these sorts of sport climbs or trad climbs is if you fall, however far you've gone from your last bolt, you will fall twice that distance. And so that can be incredibly scary because, you know, however far you're falling and whether or not, you know, that bolt or that piece of gear you placed.
How often do they, is gonna would hold they you. Put that hold or whatever it's called?
Like on a sport climb? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like a bolt? In, you know, it depends, but.
Where you're at and the, what's.
Yeah, yeah can, they call that a run. Like how far is the run from one bolt to another?
Okay.
And I've seen them as. You know, as close as 5 feet and as far away as 50 feet.
Wow!
Like,
you know, they can be with, they can be really run out.
Yeah.
You know, so okay. you can be falling huge distances, and I've taken a 20-foot fall on those, and I'll tell you, you let out a pretty high pitched scream, Terry.
I would like to hear that.
Yeah. I'd pay to hear that.
But now there's another type of climbing that you can do. Where you don't have a rope at all. So you're climbing a high climb, but you're not using a rope. This is called free soloing. Now, I've partaken in this in two ways. Once when I was young and dumb, I climbed a 30-foot climb without a rope. And I got about 20 feet into this thing, and I looked down, and it wasn't like flat either. It was like I was on the side of a hill. So if I would have fallen, like I would have gone a really long ways. And I remember having just this absolute dread come over me that was darn near paralyzing. And then I thought, well, I'm never doing this again. And I finished that. And then I did it again. I was in Thailand, and I had heard about how you can take a boat out to these rocks and you can climb off the boat. And then if you fall, you're going to go into the water.
Mm. Right.
So I did that. And
after hitting the side of the rock.
Yeah, I know, right? As you cheese grate your way down those rocks. And I'll never forget this. One of the more terrifying things I've ever seen. I'm 40 feet off the water with two Aussies that I don't know that are along on this trip. And in Thailand, they have very interesting rock formations where like there's this like stalactite kind of formations that come off these rocks. And this guy at 40 feet off, I'm watching him do this. He leans over and can just barely touch this stalactite-looking thing with his two fingers. He can get two fingers from each hand onto this thing. And he has to let his feet go and begin to dangle upside down 40 feet off the water. I'm like going, there's no way I'm doing. And he made it, and he climbed up about another 20 feet and jumped off. Dang. At about 60
Yikes.
Feet. But what we're going to be talking about today is a whole nother level of,
okay.
of scary.
Just as you were describing that,
yeah.
I'm thinking about what I just watched last yeah. night. I have anxiety right now just thinking about what I watched last night and
so,
what this guy did.
So for our listeners, if you're just to clue you in on this, I approached Terry and said, hey, Terry, we're going to talk about this film. And he's like, okay. And I just hand him the DVD and walk away. So I have yet to talk to Steve or Terry. So I had both of them watch this. I have yet to talk to either of them about what they watched.
It's still affecting me, actually. Like, my wife had to walk away.
Yeah. Well, let's just say that when I was watching it, this was one of the first movies where I felt like I actually needed an adult diaper watching it. My goodness.
So to clue you in, listeners, in this movie, Free Solo, this guy, Alex Honnold, he makes the first climb without a rope of El Cap, which
El Capitan.
Is, which is three, in Yosemite, which is over 3,200 feet. I mean, that is poop your pants high. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Also, to give you an idea of just how tall this thing is, it took Alex Honnold almost 4 hours to climb. And this is physically draining stuff. I mean, I'd be lucky to make even like up 20, 30 feet, but this guy did it for 4 hours almost.
And the one that got me where I was just shaking my head and my palms were sweating watching this is in rock climbing, there's this thing called the crux. And that's where the hardest part of the climb is. Now, that could be at the bottom or that could be at the top. It could be anywhere along the way. The crux for him was around, I believe, the 2,000-foot mark.
What's it called? The boulder? Yeah. Boulder the, something.
One of them was the boulder problem.
Yeah, there
and,
it is.
And so I'm thinking in my mind here, he's already been climbing for hours.
Yeah, I know.
And now here he is exposed thousands of feet off the ground, and he's making the most difficult move.
Okay, at one point in the movie, he was looking at his book. There was a lot of preparation that went into this, right? Yeah. He went up and down with ropes and stuff and looked at the landscape. But it was that particular point where in his book, he described it where he had to, you know, place one hand here, cross it over, grab another hold. Like he had to move his legs crossways too in order to move sideways across his boulder face.
It he was pretty just much like, had the entire mountain memorized.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is an important aspect of all of this to talk about because maybe our listeners are wondering, why are we discussing this? there's an interesting theology that rarely gets talked about, and that is a theology of adventure. Mm. And what does it look like to live our lives? And in particular, the ethics of the sorts of things that you and I participate in daily life that are dangerous. And what does it look like to calculate those sorts of risks? And so this movie is just overt and in your face, the risk that Alex is taking to make this climb. And so an important question that I want to throw out there that we're going to begin this discussion is, you know, Terry, Steve, after you watch the film, they haven't had me ask this question yet. I don't even think they knew this question was coming. After watching the film, do you think what Alex did was right or wrong?
I think I wouldn't say it was wrong, but I think he did it for all the wrong motivations. Because one of the really interesting aspects of this endeavor, if you will, this achievement that he was going for. I mean, he's had a troubled life growing up, and so he doesn't really know how to relate to other people. I mean, he lives in a van by himself kind of thing, and he just loves what he does. I mean, this brings him meaning, right? But at some point, he meets a girlfriend, and for the first time, and he tells the audience himself, like the viewers himself, that this has been the best thing that happened, right? Like this just kind of...
I think he says it made it better in every way.
Yeah, that's how he put it exactly. And so then you can kind of see the tension, right? Here is his girlfriend who loves him very much, and yet she understands that for Alex, this is... You can't take this away from him. This is so important, right? But on the other hand, she's kind of dealing with this tension, but I don't want him to die. When you're climbing that kind of a cliff face, basically, I mean, the consequences are severe, right? Once you get up above a few feet, I mean, it's every mistake, every rogue wind or bird. I mean, at some points, I thought I heard bees. I'm like, really? One false move and you're dead. And so the girlfriend is kind of, you know, she has to work through this with Alex, right?
I think what impacted me was how much it had affected other people.
That's exactly it.
Not so much himself, right? Like he got to the top and all he said was like four times, I'm delighted.
Yeah.
I'm delighted. While his cameraman is like in tears.
Wiping himself.
Because it's done. It's over. He was thinking that he might see his friend fall off the mountain.
That was a really interesting aspect because the whole time I was watching it, right at the beginning as I was watching it, the thought just kind of flashed through my mind. How did they even film this? I was thinking like drones and things like that. Turns out there's a team of six cameramen who are also climbers. And so they're planning everything on meticulously to get, okay, we're going to get this shot at this time and, you know, these two pitches here and all that kind of stuff. And after going through all of that together many, many times, they've all become really close friends. And yet here's Alex. He doesn't quite know how to commune with them in a sense. So it's really interesting seeing Alex's reaction after he finishes climbing or during the whole thing too. And then seeing the reactions of his friends.
Did you notice that they ended up needing to kind of glue cameras onto the mountain at certain difficult pitches because Alex did not want people to see him fall.
Yeah.
He did mention that. That was in his mind, but...
Yeah. I don't want them to have to see me die. Now, an interesting aspect, this guy's been climbing without ropes for apparently a long time. He's done over, he said over 1,000 climbs without a rope. And when he does it, he tends to do it more spur of the moment when he's ready and he doesn't let people know. So that it's not something he actually likes too much attention on.
Yeah.
And I could only imagine because of how psychological doing something like that would be.
Yeah.
Clearly he has an ability to focus that is unbelievable. I mean, there's in the bonus material, there's this scene where they're talking through the ethics of whether or not they should even film this, which is a significant question in of itself. Should you even film this? And there's this one scene though in there where Alex is just kind of bent over into a hole in the wall, you know, and I was actually quite surprised by this. He was thousands of feet off the ground and he's just resting his arms completely exposed. And he's kind of holding himself there by pushing his back against the rock and with his feet. And he's just looking down. So he can actually, I was kind of surprised by even talking about right now, my hands are getting sweaty again.
Yeah, yeah.
that he could sit there and actually look and actually take in the fact that he's 2,000 feet off the ground.
Right.
Another 1,000 feet to go.
I noticed that a number of times. He kind of just looks back around down.
Yeah.
I would, no.
No. And then when he left that spot, he had to go out. He had to go out, like completely exposed out and continue on. And I'm thinking to myself, nerves of steel. Yeah. I don't even know how it's possible.
You saw that segment where he gets his MRI scan, right? So then he gets a phone call from the doctors who actually did this. The doctor is explaining to him, so here's your amygdala, which controls your fear. And then if you see the control brain, that's sort of supposed to be the standard comparison kind of thing, right? And you see the amygdala lit up when there was certain kind of a stimulus, there was fear there. But then you look at Alex Honnold's brain, there's nothing, right?
And so the doctor was place.
Yeah, so the doctor was explaining, it's not that you don't feel fear, it's just that you need way more than other people,
way more stimulus,
feel the same kind of same kind of fear.
What's more than being up on the side of rock, no ropes. I don't know where you go from there.
Well, I have a couple ideas of where you go from there.
Okay.
But before we get there, Terry, you haven't answered this question yet. Was it right or wrong?
I would say for the most part, it was, I mean, if he's doing it on his own, but if he's bringing a lot of people into it, that's another story.
It changes the equation.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you want to do it on your own, which he did, he would just go up on his own sporadically on these other climbs, but this was a whole new event.
Yeah.
And I mean, you watched the cameraman on the ground. They couldn't even watch him when he went across that boulder section there.
Yeah.
They wouldn't look for minutes, like a long, long time. They couldn't stomach it. Again, it was affecting a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he realized how much it was affecting the people.
So you would say then that maybe this isn't a good thing because of how it's affecting.
Yeah, ultimately that was a big piece to it.
Now, do you think that
can I just jump in real quick there? I might even go so far as to say even if he were to do it on his own, that's still wrong in a sense. Because I mean, it was really telling towards the end of the documentary, just before he free soloed El Cap, because he's talking to his girlfriend about the ethics of all of this, right? And he says something very briefly that caught my attention. He says, it's not like we have, you know, this obligation to extend our lives. Obviously, his worldview is such that he doesn't really owe anything to anybody, right? Not even God kind of thing. And so I wonder, in a world, if there is a God who has created us and who holds us all accountable for our actions, would we say that this was the right thing to do, taking on something that is so incredibly dangerous? And to what end, I guess, right? That kind of determines the ethics of this for me too, is this was for him all about performance and all about that achievement and personal kind of enjoyment of it all. Being the first in the human history to climb to Free Solo El Cap. And so in that sense, I think it was wrong. I mean, if it would be a different story if, let's say, somebody is dying up on the top of El Cap and the only way to get there is to free solo it, and he goes and does it. I think that would be the right thing to do. But if it's purely for his personal enjoyment, I'm not too sure.
So let me jump in here, Steve. And this is a question that I was going to raise, was if he was a Christian, would that change things?
Well, this is an extreme example.
It is, and I'm going to take it in a different direction, but first...
But I would ultimately say that he has a gifting in that, right?
Right.
I mean, I think he's using whatever his gift is to do something amazing.
And something he enjoys.
And something he enjoys. On a smaller scale, I mean, we have giftings as well, right? That God has given us, and I think we can use them in not as extreme ways, but... in adventurous ways to proclaim the gospel.
Let's don't take it to the gospel yet.
Okay.
Because, Terry, earlier you said that you enjoy running. I enjoy hiking, right? So these are things that we do. And I don't think that these are gospel things. Maybe they are in the sense that I'm in creation and I'm enjoying being with my creator.
Right.
And I would definitely say that without question. Yeah. But before we move into, though, this idea, you know, of how we're using our lives for the Lord— There is this theology of adventure, though, where we have lives that we live.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of living our lives as mortal beings is that risk is inherent in everything that we do.
Right.
Now—
So, I mean, I enjoy mountain biking as well. That is, like, a thing that I love. And you can go as fast as you want down the hill, and you could crash at any time very, very quickly— Right?
And you have.
And I have.
I've
Not
seen
too
the
long
bruises.
Ago. Yeah. So, I mean, that is something I really enjoy. I like pushing myself to a point where I'm almost scared. I really do. That is not fulfilling, but it's.
Now, if on that note, this is kind of interesting because if my answer to the question, is it right or wrong, is it depends.
Mm.
I would say in many ways that it's right. In that this isn't something that he took on willy-nilly. He prepped 8 years for this and put a lot of thought and effort into what he was doing. So
yeah.
He was seeking to minimize the risk of what he was doing
right.
as best he could.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. However, where I see things start to go awry with it all is if you notice in the film, and you guys have already hinted at this, he's constantly seeking these euphoric moments. It reminds me very much of the film that we made, the Thinking Series, in session one, mm-hmm. where we talk about this guy who's climbing a mountain and he gets to the top and he has that moment, you know, I've arrived. You know, he's kind of just taking in his achievement, and for a moment he's satisfied.
Right.
And I think, you know, we experience these in business, we experience these in education. You know, everybody has these mountaintop moments. The challenge is, though, is if you're trying to find yourself in there, it will never satisfy you. It's gonna satisfy you for about 5 seconds, you know? And I wonder how long Alex would say that it even satisfied him. Because this is a theme that comes up, is that oftentimes, you know, he even talks about, they ask him, you know, are you depressed or deal with depression? You know, he's just silent.
Yeah.
And then there's other aspects of talking about his need to continually have these sorts of moments. And you can see it even when he gets to the top there, it's one of the few times in the film where you can see that he's just enjoying that achievement and how quickly it fades.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't help but ask, what mountain is he going to climb next? Which they do ask.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Because it's just kind of the next thing. And I guess what I'm getting at is that here's a person who's really trying to find themselves and is addicted to the high of putting his life in these extreme situations.
I read also that he was on a podcast and they asked him about the depression question in the film. And he says that he's more depressed than not, in the sense that he almost needs to find this something mm-hmm. that'll bring him out of this depression, you know. And in the movie, they didn't go much further than that question, and he's just silent.
Yeah.
But he expanded a little bit more on in this podcast.
I would say that that's more dangerous than what he undertook.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and this comes up in the film, is that people who free solo, which is a very select few that do this, they all die. you don't live long doing this.
And they listed them all on the movie.
Yeah, they right? Yeah, a number of them.
Number of them.
All it takes is one mistake and you're dead.
And one that was really well known that Alex Honnold knew, who died just before he climbed El Cap, right? And it's funny how he responds to it, right? And they even point that out. He almost has to just kind of shrug it off, even knowing that this person, this free soloist who died, had a wife, you know, who was absolutely brokenhearted. His response is, well, what else did she expect?
Yeah, it was pretty callous, for sure.
Yeah.
And he made it very clear to his girlfriend, Alex did, that rock climbing was more important than she.
Yeah. Wow. Brave man.
But here, now I want to start to play with the ethics of this, because I think that one aspect of this that I think is way too easy to dismiss is to say, oh, that's dangerous. It's wrong. So just a few weeks ago, I watched a different movie called First Man. And that's a movie of this group of elite astronauts that are seeking with NASA to reach the moon. And you end up watching as it gets weeded down to these two men that end up walking on the moon. And we really idolize these people and really see them as a hero. But in many ways, the adventure that they undertook was far more dangerous than what Alex undertook. Men were burned alive, men exploded, like all sorts of horrible stuff happened to people trying to reach to the moon. And since, we've had all sorts of disasters as well. Now, one of the things that was interesting about that film, there's this moment where Neil Armstrong's wife comes to him right before he's about to head off on this mission. And she says to him, listen, you know, because she knows how dangerous this is. She's watched all these other men die. And she says to him, listen, you need to go talk to your sons and you need to tell them that you may never come back. And, you know, you need to express to them, you know, the significance of this, the danger in this. And so he does, and it's this powerful moment, but it's a reminder to you that what they undertook was dangerous. Now, I find it interesting that very few people would ask the question, should they have done it? Now, Alex, they'll ask, should he have done it? Going to the moon, you don't really hear people wrestling with whether or not they should have done it.
Right. With humanity, I mean, we accomplish things because we've taken risks, right? Yes. And moved ahead that way. If we wouldn't have, we'd be a lot further behind or never achieve that.
Think about Christopher Columbus and numerous others.
Yeah.
Took a risk. Huge risk.
Huge risk, yeah.
But before we move into the, you know, more of the theology behind this, one aspect as well about risk that's often not really taken into this equation as well is the fact that you and I experience risk on a daily basis, right? When we drive in a car, when we take a plane, you know, when we go for a walk, I mean, even hiking in the woods, there is inherent risk to everything that we do. And some things that we do, there's more risk than others. Some sports, there's more risk than others. I think about, for example, race car drivers. Mm-hmm. Lots of risk. Now, one of the things, though, that's being done is they're seeking to mitigate the risk. And Alex is doing this as well as a race car driver, right? They put in years of work. You know, a gymnast, by the way, same thing. Putting in years worth of work. A circus performer, again, putting years of work into it so that they're mitigating that mm-hmm. level of risk. And so it's interesting to me that when people put in that kind of work, you know, then ethically you have less of an issue with them doing something dangerous because they're balancing that.
You could probably tell this is very new to me, right? So I'm just kind of thinking out loud as I'm talking about this. But you're right. I mean, even people who think they're safe, if you think about it, even having children, that's a huge risk
yep.
in a lot of ways, not only for the woman in terms of what kinds of physical dangers that a pregnancy might cause. And risk comes in many different forms, right? It's not just the physical risk, but when you are bringing a whole another human being into the world and actually get to have this relationship, you're going to be hurt by that person at one point or another, and you're going to hurt that person at one point or another. And so I think there is a sense in which you have two extremes, right? On the one hand, you're kind of going out doing things that are way too dangerous. But then on the other hand, you can also get into the trap of being way too safe. And we've seen what that could do to people, right? We complain, for example, about certain Christians being way too comfortable and complacent in the West and how it has impacted their evangelistic efforts and all of that stuff. And so there are two extremes. But the question, I guess, is how do you find the middle? What is a happy middle? Is there such a thing?
I guess for me, the question is, should we increase the risk?
Well, this is what I actually wanted to get to.
Yeah.
Is because I think it depends. It's this equation that you put in different factors and it changes the equation drastically. Take Alex, for example. Take him as a single male, changes the equation. You start to introduce a dating relationship into that and you experience the dynamics of him having to walk through what he's doing in that. Now, if you change that into a marriage relationship, how does that change whether or not he should be climbing that mountain or not? But then if you really want to mess with those equations, you throw children into it. If he's got a family, so he's got a wife and he's got children, and now he climbs that mountain, I don't think actually people would even watch that film.
I mean, even if I'm talking about my mountain biking, when I had kids, I didn't take the bigger jumps that I used to, kind of thing. Like, I did minimize that risk because in the back of my mind is that I have children to look after. And if I'm mangled and in the hospital for a long time, that wouldn't be good,
yeah.
Right? So that was on my mind and has been over the years when I'm biking.
Oh, yeah. With my kids, I stopped rock climbing when I had kids. I didn't even want to anymore because they far outweighed any sort of risk that I would want to take because I want to be way more cautious because of my love and responsibility to my wife and to my children.
Hopefully I'm not taking this too far away from this current discussion, but one of the things that really stuck out to me is before Alex Honnold goes up El Cap, you see him, like he's kind of said his last goodbye to his girlfriend and things like that, and he's thinking about climbing El Cap, and he is basically hashing out his philosophy, right? He says, you know, my girlfriend, for her, the meaning of life is about happiness and joy and sharing them with the people that she loves. For me, it's all about performance. It's about having that warrior spirit. And he says, it doesn't matter the cause, right? It's about being a warrior. And when there is fear, you overcome it because the goal demands that the fear be overcome. And I thought that was really, really interesting because in a lot of ways, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, yeah, the goal demands that fear be overcome, but who picked that goal? Everything just seemed really arbitrary to me because he said, it doesn't matter the cause. I'll just pick whatever, right? Whatever brings me fulfillment and joy.
He even said that happiness and how he described his girlfriend was not going to get much, right?
Yeah.
Like he said, what I'm doing is going to be a lot better and there's going to be more good things that come out of it. Being happy and this other word he described as girl, he says, That's not much. Like, you won't get much with
happy,
just that.
Happy and safe.
And safe, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he says, you know, like, if you look at history, great things were done by people who took risks, like we pointed out earlier, right?
Yeah.
But how much was done by people who were happy and safe?
Now, one last direction that I want to take things that really springboard off what you guys are talking about here is when this applies not just into our, you know, everyday lives of having fun and what we like to do for entertainment and adventure in that sense, but the calling that we have where God is involved in this equation now. And so now there is a reason to overcome a certain obstacle in our lives and to address the fear that we have. And maybe that's God calling somebody into the mission field. Maybe that's God calling a nation out of slavery and through the sea, and that they're going to have to trust him, right? And it's interesting to me that as you read the Bible, God's quite okay with people and putting people like Abraham and many others into very risky situations.
And commanding us to be bold.
Yeah.
As Christians, to step out, right?
And here's another one that makes us uncomfortable. God's okay with you dying.
Yeah. It's not a bad thing.
Right. Well, yeah, God sees it differently than we do. God knows the risks. And it's interesting how what the object of that risk is, how that changes things. And I think about that powerful scene where Jesus is with Peter and he's recommissioning him. And Peter has just dodged death as he watched Jesus be crucified. And now he's being reinstated, and Jesus is making it clear to him, Peter, this message is still going to cost you your life. And it's this moment where Peter could really rise to this moment and be like, yes, Lord, I'm going to follow you. You know, but Peter's too normal for that. Mm-hmm. He points at John and says, please tell me he's going to die as bad as I'm going to die. You know, because Jesus has explained to him, you're going to be crucified. And Jesus, in response to Peter, says, what do you care if I never let John die? And he looks back at Peter and says, follow me. And so it's interesting how this equation changes of adventure and the risks in life depending upon these variables that we place into it. Now, if I could just make one comment, though, that I think is important that has to counterbalance all of this, is that some men and women have taken huge risks in the name of God. I don't think that those are always good situations. Uh-huh. I think about some of the risks that missionaries have put their wife and kids into unnecessarily, and how many wives and kids of missionaries have died, that in many ways I've often thought, I don't know that what you did was actually a good thing.
How does the idea of preparation, like it did in the movie, come into play as a Christian?
Absolutely, it comes into play.
Yeah.
Because that's where I think you can be absolutely reckless, dangerous, and taking unnecessary risks. Mm-hmm. So taking a risk for the gospel, you know, the Bible really takes into this into account where you see the Apostle Paul interacts with this, where he really challenges whether or not you're doing it for the right reason, which is a question that came in the movie where this is being talked about, you know, doing right. it for the right reason. And you see this with the Apostle Paul where he talks about martyrdom. So he talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, he talks about dying for the gospel. Mm-hmm. And he challenges the Corinthians, are you doing these things for the right reasons? He talks about speaking in tongues. He talks about prophecy, giving your money away. And he talks about dying for the gospel. He says, are you doing it for the right reasons? And the reason he keeps pointing them back to is a love for God, right? Mm. That relationally, they're in a right relationship with the Lord and that their motivation is in the right place. Because I think it's very easy, whether that be climbing a mountain or going on a missions trip, you could be doing it for the wrong reason.
Well, that was a very interesting documentary. I am still literally still a little bit reeling from it.
In You're the welcome. Sense,
yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe that's why I couldn't sleep very good last night. Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, Terry this morning's like, I only got 5 hours of sleep. Now I know why.
Yeah.
Clenching like, your hands all night
long. Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. But it was very, very interesting. I mean, I would suggest people go watch it. I mean, like my wife, you might walk out, you know, quarter of the way through because it's intense.
Definitely worth a watch.
Called Free Solo. And I know you can rent it right now. So it's very new. Came out in September of 2018. Well, thanks for joining us, listeners. The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada. And we'll come back next week with more things to think about.